Gazarian.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Appellate Division incorrectly decided that the two hallmarks of a retail installment contract are an eventual ownership of a specified good and an express finance charge in a contract. This interpretation conflicts with the plain language of the Retail Installment Sales Act and its remedial purpose. First, eventual ownership of a specified good cannot be a hallmark of an installment contract because by its plain language, RISA extends to any contracts for goods or services for family household purposes. These services do not in fact contemplate ownership of any good. Instead, purchasers of these services receive a benefit and not a material good. Likewise, purchasers of health club services receive a benefit, the benefit of access and use of that facility, rather than ownership of any good. My second point is that while the Appellate Division correctly ruled that a finance charge or financing arrangements are a required element of an installment contract, it failed to recognize that a finance charge need not be explicitly characterized as such in the contract. RISA refers to the finance charge as a time price differential and defines it as any charge in addition to the cash price to be paid for the privilege of purchasing goods or services pursuant to a retail installment contract. And that definition also says that it doesn't matter how the charge is designated in the contract, however denominated. That's what the statute says.
From what language in the statute do you conclude that a finance charge is necessary for there to be a retail installment contract?
Justice Eldon, the statute itself does not say that, but I think that it should to advance one of the public policy purposes of the statute, which is to make available financing options for purchases of goods and services. If the ruling was otherwise, where a installment contract has to have a finance charge, that would make less available the options, interest-free options for consumers.
No, but I tell me if I'm mistaken. I thought that the Retail Installment Contract Act has other prohibitions other than usurious rates. Am I right about that?
Correct.
So, like, why would we have to say that a financing arrangement is necessary for there to be a retail installment contract, and that language does not appear in the statute?
Because it is the thrust of this remedial legislation, that it should apply only to those arrangements where there's a difference between a cash price and a finance charge, a finance price.
Are acceleration clauses permissible?
No, they're not permissible.
So, in a case where there was no finance charge, but there was a retail installment contract, but there was an acceleration charge, the statute would prohibit that, correct?
That's correct.
Are you saying that under that circumstance, if there's not a finance charge also, that the contract wouldn't apply?
Can you read the question?
So assume that there is an acceleration clause.
Yes.
In a retail installment contract, but no finance charge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I understand.
Would the statute apply?
In my opinion, it would not apply, because it would have less potential harm to consumers.
Aren't you setting a threshold the legislature did not in making that argument?
I'm just recognizing the reasoning and rationale by the two appellate divisions, division decisions, and the Perez decision, which acknowledged that the thrust of the legislation is to protect consumers from overreaching by others, which they meant by charging an interest rate.
Well, Perez was dealing with goods. I mean, if we just took the strict language of Perez, we wouldn't even be dealing with services.
Correct.
So Perez was dealing with the evil of usurious rates in the retail installment of goods, and that's what the court was addressing. wasn't addressing acceleration clauses or other items that the statute might prohibit.
That's correct. However, if the ruling is that RISA applies, notwithstanding if there is a finance charge inside the contract that would have, that would invite unwanted consequences for different industries. I'll just give you an example of your dentist, after the work is completed, giving you a price for the services, which the dentist then spreads over a period of time, but doesn't charge you any interest. And a ruling in which this court would say that that contract, because it's an installment contract, would now be subject to RISA, would make it less likely for the dentist to provide this benefit to consumers. So although it's not in the it's not explicitly in the statute, this is the legislative.
I don't think I don't think I'm following that. Run that by me again.
I was saying that if this court holds that one of the required elements for RISA to apply is an interest rate charge for the goods or services, that would make it less likely for the providers of the services to offer this opportunity, that benefit, for consumers to pay for services over time, interest-free. Because they would have to comply with RISA and other federal, and TILA and other acts.
And what aspect of RISA compels that? That answer for the dentist's forgiving contract there.
It's not in the RISA, no, but this is the overarching purpose for RISA.
No, I understand. Let me ask it more sharply. If the dentist chooses to allow you 2-3 payments with zero interest, how does that contract end up being covered by RISA?
It wouldn't, and that's the purpose, that it shouldn't be covered by RISA.
So how does it get covered if we were not to adopt your requirement that there has to be a finance charge?
Well, in that case, your dentist contract would be covered by RISA, and the dentist would have to comply with other requirements of RISA, including disclosures and other requirements, acceleration clause.
So explain why. What section of RISA brings that type of a contract in if we don't adopt the finance?
Because that contract would be for a sale of services, which is to be paid in installments. And that's the very narrow definition of a retail installment contract under RISA.
I thought you were pointing to the language in the definition of time price differential that seems to be homing in on the fact that the person is being asked to pay something in addition to the cash price or the price of the service.
Correct.
Right? So it's that additional amount that comes with the payment over time that, as I understood your argument, is the focus of, well, is among the focuses of this statute.
That's correct.
And by having that, it distinguishes your dentist's hypothetical.
Correct. That additional charge would be deemed a time price differential, which would be a financing arrangement, which would make the contract subject to RISA.
Right. So if there was simply, if they just took the lump sum and divided by 12 and said you can pay it over 12 months, you wouldn't
correct.
Have this
that
amount.
Would,
but if they add $29.99, you've got
that's correct.
An additional amount.
That's correct.
Okay. I got it. Maybe.
For RISA to apply, there
you're,
needs
you're
to be
asking, just to be clear, you're asking us to rewrite this. You want us to rewrite the statute to meet what you think is a public concern.
I'm not asking you to rewrite
no.
the statute.
It's in the statute.
But to advance the legislative intent behind the statute. This is what the statute was meant to mean when it was adopted.
I want to go back to my original question, following
sure.
up on what Justice LaVecchia just asked you, and clarify it for me, please. Your dentist bill is $500. You say to the dentist, I can't pay $500. And the dentist graciously says, I'll take $100 a month for 5 months. I'm not going to add a nickel of interest.
Right.
What brings that under RISA specifically?
It wouldn't be covered, and it shouldn't be covered by RISA, because there's no additional financing arrangement.
So even if we don't accept your argument that we should require finance agreements in order to fall within RISA, that example doesn't.
that this example does not fall under my argument, yes.
So then, go back to the initial point you were trying to make. What should we be worried about if we don't enhance in the fashion that you've suggested? What type of contract should cause concern?
Any type of contract for services that has two different pricing. One pricing for if a consumer pays it in cash, in lump sum, immediately, and the other pricing if it's paid in installments.
Come to the innocent contract, the hospital bill, the dental bill, et cetera. If the dentist tax on $10 or $5 or $2, then it falls under RESA. And that's what you're suggesting we'd be concerned about?
Yes, if the dentist only charges you $10 if you pay it in installments, then yes, it would be covered by RESA, and it should be covered by RESA, because there's different pricing, and there's a risk that the consumer may not fully understand that the different pricing. So
I meant from the hypothetical I was giving you. If the dentist just splits up the bill over 5 months with nothing extra, that's fine. But if the dentist says, and instead of 100 each month, you're going to pay $101, then it falls under RESA?
Yes. If I paid it in cash, if my price in cash would be strictly $100 multiplied by the term of the contract.
So I know this may sound like an absurd example, but the dentist is replacing a crown and he's got to do it over 5 installments, and there is, and after the 3rd time the patient goes to the dentist, he says, I don't want to go any longer, and there happens to be an acceleration clause. Well, you got to pay the full 500. You're saying that doesn't fall within RESA?
Our first determination would be whether the contract is actually an installment, retail installment contract. So assuming that it is, then yes, the acceleration clause would not be allowed inside the contract.
It would not, you would say RESA wouldn't cover it because there was no finance charge.
Right, that's why I said the first question is whether RESA actually applies to the contract. I understood.
So in the dentist, let me just see if I understand. In the dentist hypothetical, 5 months, the chief's hypothetical, 5 months, if there is zero finance charge or any additional money, not within RESA, if there is $10 additional, you're saying it should be within RESA.
Right, $10.
So what's right. The category of cases that you're saying should be in RESA, but that we should say should be in RESA are not in RESA already?
Right. My argument was that if there's an additional price on top of the cash price, then it should be covered by RESA.
How about under Justice Allen's example, where the patient stops, doesn't want to keep going with the work, and says, I'm stopping at 300. And the dentist said, well, but it's a crown, it's $500, so you owe me 200 nonetheless. Would that be RESA? There's no finance charge, it's simply charging for part of the contract that hasn't been performed.
No, it wouldn't be a RESA contract.
You're using the phrase cash price, so let me just stay with a hypo. The dentist says, give me $500 today, or give me $101 for each of the next 5 months.
Right.
Covered by RESA?
It would be covered by RESA, because there's an additional $5 charge on top of the cash price, and that's how the statute...
The floodgates concern that you're raising with us, quite legitimately, was that presented to the legislature?
I don't think that was presented to the legislature when the statute was enacted, but the courts that interpreted the statute, the Millett court, the Perez court, and Girard court, they acknowledged that one of the main purposes behind the statute is protection of consumers from overreaching by others.
That might very well have been the major one. That doesn't mean that there weren't ancillary. Are you able to very quickly tick off for us other things that are prohibited by RESA other than usurious interest rates?
Sure. It requires certain disclosures to the consumer. Then it caps the permissible fees. For example, a delinquency fee, I think, is capped at $10. And then a bad check fee is capped at $25. Then it sets requirements how that contract can be later resold in a secondary market.
Okay, so just stop there with your dentist. The dentist charges a delinquency fee. You're saying because there was no financing charge, RESA isn't going to apply?
Yes, RESA would not apply to that contract. because it would have no potential harm to consumers.
What, the delinquency fee? It's prohibited by the statute. How could that not be a harm to the consumer?
But if the statute was not intended to cover that type of arrangement.
Well, that's about, we accept your argument and disregard the plain language of the statute.
So,
if the dentist charged a $100 bank fee, but it was no, but there was no cash differential otherwise, not covered by RESA?
If that fee is only charged to installment payers?
No.
Or to all of buyers?
Any customer who gives a bad $500 check under our hypothetical, the dentist then tries to bill them $100 for that bad check.
If the price is the same for two groups of consumers, it's not a RESA contract.
But if so, there's no installment payment in that hypothetical that the chief just gave.
Even though RESA includes among the prohibited acts that very concern.
Correct, but the first question is whether RESA actually applies to the contract. And if it doesn't, then none of the provisions of RESA obviously.
And you're pivoting off of the definition in 16C1? Is that
of the definition
for your
and an additional requirement of a financing arrangement, which by definition includes installments, and then an additional component being an actual interest charge on the contract.
Where do you get that from C1?
No, it's not, and I said it's an additional to C1, the narrow definition of an installment contract.
You agree that the finance charge does not fall within the language of
C1? Correct. It's not specifically required under the statute.
But aren't you pointing to the language in the definition of time price differential? I mean, you quoted it to us before, and I asked you about it. I thought that's what you were pointing to.
Yes.
It refers to amounts, however denominated or computed, in addition to the cash price or prices to be paid by the retail buyer.
Right. I made the argument in connection with my other second argument that a finance charge does not have to be specifically, expressly designated as a finance charge on the contract. It can be initiation fee.
But I understood that as underscoring your argument that we're dealing in this group of installment contracts with ones that have finance charges.
Correct. But they should have, yes, they would have a finance charge.
But a time price differential that violates RESA, it's got to be a certain interest. It's just one of the prohibited acts under RESA, correct?
Of course, yes.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No, Your Honors. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Israel.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The membership agreement in this case is not subject to RESA, and therefore both the trial court and the appellate division were correct in dismissing the case in its entirety. There are two relevant statutes that have been addressed throughout this case. There is RESA, and then there is the Health Club Services Act. The Health Club Services Act governs health clubs. That is what the legislature determined was going to be permissible and not permissible in a membership agreement for a health club. And that is in Code Sections 56 and 8-39. RESA is an entirely different book. It's in Chapter 17 titled Corporations, Finance, and Insurance. It's governed by DOBE. The Health Club Services Act is governed by the DCA. I bring that to the Court's attention because I think it illustrates that RESA has nothing to do with this membership agreement, that the legislature determined it had nothing to do with this membership agreement, and that the courts have similarly made those pronouncements in their case law. So while we keep talking about whether the installation fee is improper, the installation fee is not improper under the Health Club Services Act. There's nothing in that act that says you can't have an installation fee.
So put that act to one side.
Sure.
And tell us why RESA, which speaks to retail installment contracts and has a number of limits and prohibitions in it, does not apply.
Right.
Just looking at RESA.
We do not accept that just because there's more than one payment that by definition you have an installment contract or certainly a retail installment contract. Judge Linares, and I know it's a federal court case in Vendito, made that very clear and explained how doing something on a monthly basis, which obviously is more than one payment, is not a retail installment contract subject to RISA. I would suggest that if that were the case, that everything, including my own salary, would be subject to RISA because I get an annual salary and I'm paid over 24 months. That's not an installment contract. It's not what the legislature intended a retail installment contract to be. And that's not what Perez suggests. In going through the entire rationale of the history of usurious loans and the problems in the rent-to-own industry, when you read Perez in its entirety, and I know two of your honors were on that opinion, that's not what the purpose of RISA is. It's not to expand to every single contract that happens to be more than one payment. And so, for example, at page 205, RISA, this is from Perez, was part of a package of laws designed to protect consumers from overreaching by others, to protect consumers from overextending their own resources, and also to promote the availability of financing to purchase various goods and services. None of those three are here. There's no interest, there's no overreaching, there's not protecting consumers from overextending their resources, and there's no financing.
Because those were the facts of Perez, and it may very well be that the primary concern of the legislature was these usurious interest rates. It doesn't mean that the legislature wasn't concerned about other types of prohibited acts under the Retail Installment Sales Act. No?
I believe that this court got the purpose of RISA correct in Perez. Applying it to this case, and Mellett applied it to this case on health clubs, and so did Retro Fitness. Those appellate divisions applied the rationale of Perez to the language in RISA and made it clear that RISA did not apply to health clubs. So, and I think that when you look at the remaining definition in C1, when it gives the analogous types of contracts that RISA was, in the minds of the legislature, intended to be compared to, security agreements, chattel mortgages, conditional sales contracts, or other similar instruments in any contract for the bailment or leasing of goods by which the bailee or lessee agrees to pay as compensation. None of that is here.
Well, if we take that list, and it's just a list, it says includes, then we wouldn't be dealing with services at all because that second sentence only mentions goods.
The first section does reference services.
Yeah, but if the second one, which is just a non-exhaustive list, is dealing with goods. So if I were to accept your argument that I have to now define sentence one totally by sentence two, I have read services out of the Retail Installment Sales Act.
No, because I can come up with services that are analogous to the goods that are referenced as by way of analogy in sentence two. I would agree that they are not limited to those, but they have to be analogous.
Give us an example or two.
Sure. You want to pay for a $30,000, I know we're in the Northeast, a $30,000 wedding that you can't pay for up front. You're not getting any contemporaneous use of the wedding venue or the wedding band. Okay? There may be a financing charge because you have to pay it over time. And at the end of the day, you are obtaining the actual final use of that service, which is the wedding band and the wedding venue. You can make similar analogies with college tuition, day camps. These are very expensive things that are paid over time with no contemporaneous use, sometimes involving a finance charge, which Dobie believes is a requirement under RISA. And going back to the very last phrase of RISA, there's an ownership component. That goes back all the way to the Walker versus Furniture case that we all learned in first year law school and was the crux of the rationale in Perez. Who are you trying to protect and what are you protecting them from? You're not protecting them from every single contract that you could possibly enter into for a good or service.
So Dobie, with expertise in this area, comes in and says this should cover medical, dental, hospital. You say no?
I actually thought that there was a separate statute, and I can't point to it now, that covered professional services. And that there was a legislative decision to treat professional services different from other services. And so the legislature has pronounced that. I don't recall whether it's part of RISA as an amendment or whether it was a separate statute. So I think I would defer to the legislature on that. But this is a health club, and the health club has an entire statute dedicated to it.
So let's stick with that, the Health Club Services Act. Did the Appellate Division even speak to that? Appellate Division opinion in this case. Did they even mention the Health Club Services Act? And even if they do you anywhere in your brief claim that the Health Club Services Act preempts the Retail Installment Sales Act?
No, we do not make a preemption argument. We are arguing that the existence of the Health Club Services Act, with the pronounced explanation as to what is supposed to be in that agreement, plus what is not supposed to be in the agreement, added to the fact that the DCA, which is the agency in charge of health clubs, specifically allows for enrollment fees on their own form, which is part of the record at DA-12, that it means that RISA, by the legislature, was not intended to cover this type of membership agreement, regardless of the fact that there were multiple payments, because you don't own anything at the end, there's no financing, and there's no interest component, which this court has held is the specific, is the time price differential that is referred to in the statute. This court in Paris said it's interest.
You know,
none of those things are here.
You may have an argument that, look, RISA could apply, and yet, I don't have the Health Club Services Act, but I'll assume your representation that permits enrollment fees, that you have to accommodate the two statutes. You have to harmonize them, that this one particular fee may be permissible. Why would that mean that the Retail Installment Sales Act nevertheless wouldn't cover health clubs?
One reason is you have two completely conflicting statutes then.
So, let's say your health club is charging usurious rates, like through the roof. Your argument is, doesn't apply, right?
If a health club, unlike here, and it's been acknowledged in the papers, unlike here, that there is a financing charge.
I'm giving you a hypothetical, okay? Yep. Not your health club. Let's talk about the bad health club.
Okay,
in the future. Yeah. Wants to charge usurious rates.
I like the name.
As far as you're concerned, the Retail Installment Sales Act wouldn't apply.
If you have a bad gym that charges a finance charge and has usurious rates, and then the only distinction then is an argument where there is nothing owned at the end, you would have a much closer argument as to whether RISA applies in the first place. The components that you've added of, in that case, usurious rates and a finance, I think could bring it into RISA, but that's not our case. And it's not like we have to go back to the trial court to make those determinations.
An acceleration clause. It's 24 months. After 1 month, you charge the full 24 months. Okay? So it's 24. It's $100 for one. And you say, okay, you owe me that $2,400. You had your 1 month. You agreed to the acceleration clause. You would argue RISA doesn't apply. That's okay?
Two responses. Number one, whether or not something is a violation of RISA is a second question after whether RISA applies in the first place. That would be a circular argument to suggest that RISA applies because there's a violation. It doesn't mean that the statute applies in the first place, and I would say it doesn't, and so the acceleration clause is irrelevant. My second argument is I do not read Section 35 to be that restrictive on acceleration clauses. It says here that no retail installment contract, .. may be declared immediately due and payable, quote, because the retail seller or holder deems himself to be insecure. That is not an outright ban on acceleration clauses. That phrase goes along with the entire theory and rationale of Perez. Who are you trying to protect? It's not every single consumer. It's those consumers who are overstretched, who are having to rent a piece of furniture because they can't pay for it up in advance. And so if the argument is, I've entered into an agreement, and I agreed to it, but now I'm insolvent, I really can't pay it, well, the legislature said that is a reason that you should not be able to enforce an acceleration clause. But if the legislature wanted to have an outright ban on acceleration clauses, there is no reason for that because phrase at all. They would have just put a period after due and payable, and it would have covered every acceleration clause known to man. That's not this case. And again, it reinforces why RISA does not apply to this health membership agreement.
It seems to me, and I don't have an example as we sit here, but it seems to me there are industries that have separate statutes that are also within the Consumer Fraud Act. In other words, there's a consumer-oriented statute that deals with particular industry practice. But unless the legislature says that the general provisions of the Consumer Fraud Act don't apply, they do apply. And sometimes that industry-specific standard becomes a regulatory violation if it's violated and goes into the Consumer Fraud Act. What's the evidence that you could give us that with respect to this health club, I have the name wrong here, Services Act, is that what you said?
Health Club Services
Health Act. Club Services Act that you mentioned today, that the legislature was in essence saying health clubs are over here, and even if something a health club does violates this other statute, RISA, it's not within RISA.
The issue here is a $29.95 initiation fee.
Understood.
There is nothing about that is unconscionable, fraudulent, abhorrent business practice. It's the exact type of thing that would have been in the Health Club Statute Act as to whether or not you could have a $29.95 thing.
I understand that you're making an argument that they really are, the legislature really was compartmentalizing this and recognizing that health clubs have specific issues that are unique to them and dealing with those issues. But where do we see that? Because our role is not to figure out what's the best thing the legislature could have done. We have to, in order to exclude an industry from a statute, we have to see evidence of that, if not in the plain language, in the legislative history or somewhere, in order to say that.
So in Perez, again, this court explained what its role was interpreting a statute. And at page 208, it said, our obligation is to interpret the statute reasonably to serve its apparent legislative purpose. And in furtherance of that goal, we long ago established that in the quest for the intention, the letter gives way to the rationale of the expression. The words used may be expanded or limited according to the manifest reason and obvious purpose of the law.
Right, but we're not talking here general purposes of the law. We're talking about the legislature all the time in all kinds of statutes says this covers X, Y, and Z, or A, B, and C, but not D, E, and F. And sometimes cross-references so we know where to go to find where D, E, and F is covered. If the legislature intended to exclude an industry from this statute, where is the evidence of that?
I don't think it intended to exclude health club services. I think it intended to not include the breadth of contracts that are out there between buyer and seller. I do not believe RISA is as all-encompassing as it could be read if one only reads the first sentence of the definition of retail installment contract. Because if it were that broad, there would be no reason to give all of these analogous types of agreements that they cover. And there would be no reason to refer to the fact that you would own something at the end. And I think this court in Perez acknowledged that when it went through the reasons that RISA was put into place in the first place.
It wasn't a services case. You know, you've presented to us a very fine defense, depending upon how we rule. If you go back, you're saying that this initiation fee is perfectly fine. If that is the case, even if RISA applies, then you're home free. You're going to win this case.
I don't want to win this case back at the trial court, Your Honor. I want to win it right now.
Well,
my client should not have to go back to the trial court. This court right now, as the appellate divisions has and the trial court had, should make a determination that just because it was a $29.95 initiation fee, that does not mean by itself that this contract is subject to RISA.
That's not the issue before us.
That isn't before us. We have a motion to dismiss. We have the trial court having really invoked two issues which you've identified as its reasons for the motion to dismiss. I don't think you'd want us to be at going beyond that and essentially interpreting the facts. We're talking about those two legal issues, statutory interpretation issues.
This court ruled that RISA didn't apply. The appellate division said RISA didn't apply. I think there's a fundamental threshold matter before this court as to whether RISA applies to this agreement. I think the answer is clearly no.
Well, there's a distinction between the question, does RISA apply, does RISA invalidate this agreement, or is this agreement a violation of RISA, versus the broader questions of can services contracts ever be in, or can something without an interest payment ever be in? That's a broader issue. And as I understand this case, and you tell me if you believe I'm wrong about this, we are really here only on those statutory issues.
If RISA does not apply to this contract, this case is over.
So let's stop there. I want to go back a little bit. You've framed two arguments for us that are potentially persuasive. The first is, my client is governed by the Healthcare Services Act. Don't look at RISA. And what Justice Patterson was asking you and others are, tell us what you're relying on in the statute books to make that argument, number one. And number two, if RISA applies or doesn't apply, tell us why, looking at the language here. That's what we need your help on. So start again with the first.
Okay, in the first one, I am not making a preemption argument. I am trying to argue that by the way the Health Club Services Act is drafted, plus what the definition of retail installment contract is, and how this court interpreted RISA in Perez, that if you put those three together, there is no interpretation whereby anyone thought that RISA would apply to this type of membership agreement.
As I hear that, it's really focused on the second argument, that RISA's scope is not broad enough to cover here, and it doesn't have much to do with the Healthcare Services Act. Am I mistaken?
Correct. My apologize if I confused anyone, my references to the Health Club Services Act were one factor that this court should take into account in determining that RISA doesn't apply, because there's so much stuff in that act about governing health club memberships that one could see what the legislature was doing. I would argue, but I'm not part of the legislature, so I'm not going to represent this, but I would argue that if the legislature truly believed that health clubs were governed by RISA, that they would not need to have done 15 years later and put everything into the Health Club Services Act. But in terms of RISA itself, without focusing on the HCSA, I would look to the second and third parts of the definition of the retail installment contract, which refer to analogous types of contracts. They are the ones that DOBE governs, and remember, this is in section 17 of the New Jersey statutes. And in the same title, 17, is where DOBE's role is found. And DOBE's role is to govern insurance, banking, savings, trust, guarantee, safe deposit, indemnity, mortgage, investment, and loan corporations, which is 17:1-1. The types of contracts that are referred to in the definition of retail installment contract go hand in hand with the things that DOBE is there to enforce. None of these things come close to a health club membership. And so that's what we're arguing, that RISA was there to deal with, and the attorney for Dobie said it, one of the key components was financing. They were concerned about usurious rates. It's the same concern that this court acknowledged in Perez. You had a case there where someone was trying to buy $9,000 worth of goods, and by the time they were done, it was going to cost them $18,000, and I don't even think you mentioned it, but those goods are going to be obsolete by the time that they have to pay that extra money.
So are you finding evidence of legislative intent, and I don't know the exact statute we're talking about, but presumably there's an enabling statute that gives Dobie the authority over these items that you just read. Is that what you were reading from? 1711, that would be probably it.
Yes,
this is what Dobie's in charge of.
I am reading from, let me turn it.
You said, I think you said 17 colon.
I have in my notes NJSA 17:1.1.
1.1, okay. So is there anything, any statute where RISA is sent to Dobie and essentially what the legislature does with agencies, which is to say, it's within your expertise, do your regulations, etc.
I took that from Dobie's amicus brief. I'm not aware of any direct statute, but I recall in their brief, and I have it in my notes, that Dobie said he was the agency responsible for enforcing RISA, and that was one of the reasons he wanted to submit an amicus in the first place.
So is it your view that the reason Dobie is here saying that a finance charge is required is because they view RISA being their charge as indicating that some kind of financing has to be involved?
Yes, Judge Patterson.
So so otherwise it makes no sense to put health clubs under the auspices of Dobie other than the fact that they work out more, if that's
correct. And I would suggest then that if that were the case, that Dobie would be reviewing health club registrations and the health club agreements and not the DCA. And it's clearly the DCA that is in control of health clubs.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
One last thing. I think the appellate division in this case addressed it, but if there is an issue about the validity of Mellett, because Mellett did say that it focused on goods but not services, I would argue that Mellett is still proper law and still had the prior holding and could just be extended to cover services in the right situation. The Aptiv here, while it didn't need to, actually addressed that and wanted to try to clarify that. And so it did spend the time trying to figure out how services would potentially come under RISA. So I don't think that, if that is a concern of anyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wolf, rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to make a few points, and I'll try and be quick. So first of all, as to Dobie's argument, it's nowhere in the statute that finance charges are required, and I went through that, and I believe Justice LaVecchia's question. The definition of what a time price differential is different than what the statute applies it. And I read before under Section 40, it's authorized to charge a time price, but it's not a requirement. So I just wanted to stress that point. I also wanted to stress, even though this court gives deference to state agencies charged, and by the way, Dobie is charged with regulating RISA, there's licensing requirements to become a retail installment seller or a sales finance company, and that's expressly in the retail installment sales contract, so they are authorized specifically in the statute to do that.
They're mostly with you, Mr. Wolf.
No, I know. So
I'm not sure you're fighting too hard about the deference.
I'm not trying to negate that, but I just want to.
Well, do you want us to give deference to them?
No. I want in Girard, which is the basis of this whole argument with the word financing, and also requires financing, which goes back to 1978. This court, as it was then constructed, in footnote 5 said, though interpretation of a statute by an agency engaged in administration of that act may shed interpretive light, it is not conclusive and not determinative here. And I would argue that their interpretation that you need a finance charge is the same. It's not determinative here.
But you like the rest of their brief.
I love the rest of their argument. Okay, it goes with that. Anyway, I want to just hit a couple other points, if I may. I know we're stressed for time here. So the Vendito case versus Vivint case was my case, like a lot of consumer cases in New Jersey are. That was an alarm services contract case. I still believe that that, even though Judge Linares at the district court, which is not binding on any court in this, ruled that that wasn't truly a retail installment contract, there was a requirement in that case too that you had to pay for the full 5 years or else there were penalties and other clauses and other things you have to do. And I believe that we didn't appeal that to the Third Circuit because we're not sure the Third Circuit always gets New Jersey state law, and we waited for cases that would go up the line straight here in New Jersey to make that argument. So we disagree with Judge Linares' decision in the Vendito versus Vivint case. Other issues, Retro did not rule on RESA at all. Retro was my case also, where it was after, now it was decided while it was on appeal only on the issue of class certification, and it only dealt with the declassification of the RESA class based on Mellett. Professional services was amended, as in the Dobie brief, was amended into a defined what professional services is actually included in RESA. Ms. Israel made a point about a period after a sentence when we were talking about the, in response to Justice Albin's questions about the clause that makes you advance it.
Acceleration clause.
The acceleration clause. He said there would have been a period there. But we didn't say in the definition of a retail installment sales act, there is a period after it says two or more contracts over time, and then it has other examples as justices. So there is a period there, and that's his same argument. And to the issue that Ms. Israel says is part of the Health Club Services Act, that they approved contracts, again, that goes to what we talked about when I was on up initially. That's not an issue or a fact before this court. It's nowhere in the record other than Mr. Israel says that the case. But I have several other health club services contracts, and I'm going to tell you when it comes to a factual issue that he's wrong. I've personally deposed the head of the DCA responsible for these contracts. They don't review them anymore. They never reviewed them for approval. They reviewed them to look to see there were certain provisions in the Health Club Services Act, like the right to cancel within 3 days, and two other factors that they looked at. In their packet, they used to give people to make an application, they included a sample form. It's not like under the UCC where they say if you use this deficiency and you put all this in it.
Is this in the record?
It's not in the record in this case at the trial court.
And what does it have to do with the issues that you
I was just trying to refute some of his points. So anyway, at the bottom line, I believe this is a retail installment contract. I believe the trial court got it wrong in dismissing and that we should go forward. I just wanted to talk about some of the issues that he said that aren't really in the record below at the trial court, and whether or not they approved this contract is not a fact in the record that would come out if you decide to reverse and remand.
Thank you, Mr. Webb. Thank you to counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.